Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Frontline,
by the way, has an outstanding production.
Geography Frontline.
Hey Frontliners, how's it going? I'm back from New York City and back here in Austin, Texas. Whoa, these were some really intense days. Yeah, lots of talks and presentations, colleagues to talk to and people to meet. And yeah, the most important things, those meetings, the conference after the conference. Know what I mean? Huh? The parties, where you can get a chance to talk to a lot of people in a more casual kind of environment. Yeah, that's really good to make some contacts, yeah. Well, that's what I did, and I brought some audio material back home you can listen to in a second. That's one thing I really wanted to encourage you to do, by the way. Whenever you go on a field trip or stay someplace else, take your audio recorder with you and keep your eyes open, yeah? When you spot something geographical, start the recording and tell us about it. Just tell us. And if you send your stories and reports to comment@geography.com, I can integrate them into one of the next episodes of Geography Frontline. And to give you an example of how this could sound, let's start today's show with a reprise of our urban renewal topic we discussed using the example of New York City's High Line. So, topics for today are hydraulic fracturing and the High Line.
Hey Frontliners, this is me standing on the High Line in New York City and walking. To my left, there's a big construction site for a new neighborhood that's spreading now, almost in the midtown, in the center of Manhattan, that totally will be redeveloped. And on the other side, there's some older housing complexes, facilities, and everything looks like it will be turned down and restructured, put up again, and totally rebuilt. Very fancy, very nice. See a Mandela sign, just a painting on the wall, some old crappy advertising, and old staircases, and yeah, that's really a zone in development, and that's really great. Oh, and there's a baseball field. Wow, that looks nice too. So left and right, they on the High Line, they have some benches to sit down that look very nice, like in the 3D video. I think I have to post that to the show notes again. We talked about that a few episodes ago. And there are actually some old tracks that can still be seen and are there. And there's grass and everything over it now and covering the old tracks. That's really nice. Now we have modern glass structures coming up from the new buildings. Here it says home on the High Line, which is really pretty amazing. So that's just to give you an impression how it feels like or sounds like walking on the High Line. And I can show you, if you are next time or in New York City, you should definitely go here, make a stop and walk. Just walk. Okay, that's all for now. Bye.
So, this is the High Line. Sounds interesting, huh? I actually took some pictures while walking, and you can find them on our Facebook page at facebook.com/geography. Be sure to check them out. And by the way, I didn't walk alone. I had some friends and colleagues with me, like Stuart Aitken, head of department from the Department of Geography at San Diego State University, and Stefan Zimmermann, senior lecturer at University of Osnabrück in Germany. And while walking, I had a little chat with him.
I just met my good old friend, Stefan Zimmermann. He's a human geographer from the University of Osnabrück, who worked with me in Mainz for the last 4 or 5 years. And so, hey, what do you think of that project?
I think it's pretty well, like an oasis-like thing within the big city. Great chance, but I guess it's going to turn into a real, very expensive housing area now. So you could see the whole gentrification going on down here. That's quite amazing. It reminds me of all the harbor cities within Western Europe.
Oh yeah, right, like Rotterdam, right, and Hamburg.
Yeah, for example.
Yeah, let's take a picture of this one. And when you look around and look at all the people here, to me it seems that most of them are tourists, right? And not very locals that are using the High Line.
Well, you could see some joggers going around, and probably we're a bit too late or too early within the day. So I guess probably in the evening. It's rather crowded and early in the morning. So, and to be honest, it's the first day where the weather's really great. So,
yeah, true.
I do believe that it might improve within the next 2 or 3 weeks, and it'll be really, really packed.
And especially if it's greener and a little warmer, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's really a nice project, like this. This approach of bringing more urban green space to the city center, and yeah, and it's close to the water. Any final thoughts?
Pardon?
Any final thoughts? Yeah, looking at the boats.
It's amazing. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, cool.
Spent here all day long.
Yeah, well, let's just do this. Okay. Okay, thank you so much.
So, this is how your reports could sound like. Don't be afraid to hit the record button, right? It's really fun. While recording, you're actually sensitize yourselves and to all the geographic content around you. The mic keeps you more focused, kind of. Yeah. Again, send your comments to comment@geography.com or post some interesting stuff about urban renewal on our Facebook wall. That's always an easy way to share topics you've discovered.
What's that sound?
Well, this section normally is part of the second part of the show. Whatever. Last episode we've talked about soundscapes in the urban environment, remember? And here's one example of those single sound events you could experience while walking through the city. Any idea what this might be? Well, that's an old tram in the streets of Lisbon in Portugal. Beautiful tiny yellow vehicles. Yeah, they are pretty famous. I'm sure you've seen them on those pictures and postcards. Today, there's another sound riddle for you. And listen to this one. Any idea what source causes such a sound? If you do, please go ahead and send your guesses to comment@geography.com or post your thoughts on our Facebook wall. You are also more than welcome to call the Geography voicemail and leave an audio comment. And to do this, open Skype on your computer, iPhone or whatever device and call Geography. That's the Skype name that lets you reach the Frontline voicemail, and calls are recorded as an MP3 file and can be integrated into one of the next episodes. So to complete our follow-up on episode 119, we also had a quick vote related to soundscapes, right? So the question was, why do we use earphones while walking through the city? Answer A, to tune out the urban to tune out the urban soundscape. 40% of the frontliners said, that's to tune out the urban soundscape. And also 40% said, that's to take a break and relax. 20% said that this should that they should use earphones while walking through the city to have a known urban soundtrack. And we didn't get any other answers or other opinions about that. So that's kind of a diverse result, right? 40-40-20. So for me, personally, it can really be all of those answers. Sometimes I just want to get rid of all the traffic noise around me and put my earphones on, and then I use them just to relax. And sometimes I feel like a certain piece of music would perfectly accompany what I'm seeing right then. And then I use my earphones to create my own urban soundtrack. And if you should be out in the streets right now while listening to this episode, I hope that this next song does it for you. These are the Dive Poets with the song about the most wonderful city ever, the capital of Texas. This is Austin.
My mama always called me her wayward son, but I've got those boots on the run. But I've lied and I've cheated and I've stolen some, but I left that all behind in San Antonio. Austin's holding on, though she sang all of her songs, and I'll be dry-eyed tonight. Austin, I'm alright. I loaded up that Greyhound in Galveston, and I drove that bus all night through to get back to the one that I adore. And Austin, you know that town is you. Austin's holding on, though she sang all of her songs. And I'll be driving down 35. Austin, I'm on time.
The Dive Poets with their EP The Good and the Light, and the song is called Austin. From the Podsafe Music Network, you find this on music.meview.com. This time the song isn't available in the iTunes store, but I put the link to the website and to the Facebook page of the Dive Poets into this week's show notes. That would be thedivepoets.com or facebook.com/thedivepoets. So, it's time again to take a look at our Facebook page. All the topics can be discussed right here on Frontline on Facebook. I really have to say that comments are coming in kind of slowly. Yeah. And if you find the time to post something on our wall, please, please do so. Go ahead. Just open facebook.com/geography and post something. Some geographical thoughts would be really great. Especially if we want to keep up the discussions, right? And keep them going. Here's an interesting post from Mila. He wrote, it's in German. Well, it's related to a link, a video he posted. It's in German, but about fracking in the US. It's a pretty interesting discussion going on in Germany and elsewhere to stop fracking. There are no real long-term studies about the environmental impacts of fracking, and despite the obvious impacts, gas in the water, the industry claims everything is fine. Is fracking a good source for our energy problems? Is it reliable, and is it worth taking the risk? So, what is Mila talking about? It's hydraulic fracturing, or a short version, fracking, yeah? Not freaking, as you might think. So hydraulic fracturing. So let's take a closer look at this topic. Kind of a funny sound.
Hydraulic fracturing improves the productivity of a well by either creating new fractures that act as flow channels farther into the formation, or extending the existing flow channels further into the formation.
Let me cite here from ProPublica.org. Hydraulic fracturing is a process used in 9 out of 10 natural gas wells in the United States, where millions of gallons of water, sand, and chemicals are pumped underground to break apart the rock and release the gas. So, it's about drilling for gas in regions where normal techniques wouldn't be profitable, right? Earthworks Action.org, that's the website, says geologic formations may contain large quantities of oil or gas, but have a poor flow rate due to low permeability or from damage or clogging of the formation during drilling. This is particularly true for tight sands, shales, and coalbed methane formations. Hydraulic fracturing stimulates wells drilled into these formations, making profitable, otherwise prohibitively expensive extraction. Within the past decade, the combination of hydraulic fracturing with horizontal drilling has opened up shale deposits across the country and brought large-scale natural gas drilling to new regions. And getting access to new gas and oil fields is pretty important, right? One of the key arguments, besides lower gas prices, is energy independence. If you're following the presidential debates right now that are going on because of the upcoming election in the USA, you can get a feeling for what energy independence means in a political kind of way. It's really important. All the GOP candidates running for president or trying to become the GOP nominee to run against Barack Obama are supporting the idea of energy independence. Okay, but Mila on our Facebook page, he has heard about some environmental impacts that are somewhat concerning, right? So, if we take a look at the website hydraulicfracturing.org, it seems to be totally safe. Hydraulic fracturing is a proven technological advancement which allows producers to safely recover natural gas and oil from deep shale formations. This technology has the potential to not only dramatically reduce our reliance on foreign fuel imports, but also to significantly reduce our national carbon dioxide CO2 emissions and accelerate our transition to a carbon-light environment. Wow. Okay, but then I read this headline at today's HuffingtonPost.com, and there it says, Montana fracking meeting on potential oil development draws a crowd. So, and what draws a crowd here? So, more than 160 people concerned about oil exploration along the Rocky Mountain front attended an information meeting that included information about hydraulic fracturing or fracking. Why is that? Isn't fracking safe and environmentally friendly? Concerns about property rights and changing landscape. Yeah. People fear ending up living in a kind of an oil field. Wow, that's not nice. And if you take a look at the process and the facilities needed, it really doesn't seem to require lots of land. So this way, I don't see the point here. But yeah, you have the well, and that's about it. But what about environmental issues? Over the past few months, two important developments have taken place. The first was a major news story when the EPA, and that's the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, recognized the possibility that chemicals used for fracking in central Wyoming were the likely cause of contaminated local water supplies. This was the first admission by a government agency that hydraulic fracturing is potentially a source for water contamination. Wow! Another independent study conducted in northeastern Pennsylvania and upstate New York by scientist Robert Jackson of Duke University stated that methane concentrations in drinking water were much higher if the homeowner was near an active gas well. water contamination. Wow, that's not good, right? That's really bad. And there's even more. So let's go on reading. Here it says, the second major development in recent months has been reports that hydraulic fracturing may be connected to the increase of earthquakes occurring in Ohio, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. Here we have the second concerning issue. Potential earthquakes. Ugh. I don't know what to think of that now. So in the end, I would guess it comes all down to money. It's always about money, right? Are there potential risks of hydraulic fracturing? Okay, seems like it. Mm-hmm. Seems so. Is it economically efficient to use this method to get out more gas out of the ground? Again, it seems to be like this. And if you take a look who is really big in hydraulic fracturing, then you stumble over one name, Halliburton. Yeah, right. Right, that's Dick Cheney's little company. Bloomberg reports on January 23rd, the net income of Halliburton in 2011 rose 50% to $906 million or 98 cents a share. Halliburton widened its lead last year as the largest fracking service company. There you have it. Fracking means big money. And then there's this little side sentence I find extremely interesting. Here it says, here it's about that the company beat by 1 cent the average of 33 analysts' estimates compiled by Bloomberg. And here it says, excluding a $15 million charge related to an unspecified environmental matter. $15 million charge related to an unspecified environmental matter. I'm just saying. Okay, everybody, here's a quick vote for Geography Frontline episode 120, hydraulic fracturing. If you think answer A is the right one to vote, a way towards energy independence, then go ahead, go on our Facebook page, click the hyperlink connected to the quick vote and just hit this answer A. Or you go to, or you decide to vote for answer B. Hydraulic fracturing is a profitable investment. Or you think might be answer C, a huge environmental risk. Or you just have another opinion, then you would vote for answer D. So whatever you decide to vote for, please go ahead and participate in this week's quick vote. You can find the link, as I said, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/geography, or on this week's episode page on geography.com. Alexander von Humboldt, one of the founding fathers of geography, is on his voyage towards the Americas in 1799. And from his diary, we try to learn what is so exciting about geography, about traveling and being able to recognize all the different geographic aspects of the trip. So last time we stopped when Humboldt embarked for the Americas and left behind the Canary Islands. He was just on his ship. And so let's hear what's happening next on his trip. Let me read from my iPad here. From the time we entered the torrid zone, we were never weary of admiring at night the beauty of the southern sky, which, as we advanced to the south, opened new constellations to our view. We feel an indescribable sensation when, on approaching the equator, and particularly on passing from one hemisphere to the other, we see those stars which we have contemplated from our infancy progressively sink and finally disappear. Nothing awakens in the traveler a livelier remembrance of the immense distance by which he is separated from his country than the aspect of an unknown firmament. Wow. Now, this is something. And actually something I've experienced while living in Brazil for about 9 months. Back in, well, I don't know, 2000 and something, two or so, I think. Yeah. And things in Brazil look quite differently than they look in Germany, for sure. But that didn't hit me as hard as walking home one night from a party and looking up into the sky. A sky with stars you've never seen before. That's really kind of scary, really. Really kind of scary. Made me feel somewhat disconnected. Okay, whatever. Personal inside view. The lower regions of the air were loaded with vapors for some days. We saw distinctly for the first time the Southern Cross only on the night of the 4th of July, in the 16th degree of latitude. It was strongly inclined and appeared from time to time between the clouds, the center of which, furrowed by uncondensed lightnings, reflected a silvery light. If a traveler may be permitted to speak of his personal emotions, I shall add that on that night I experienced the realization of one of the dreams of my early youth. Yeah, there you have it. It's kind of quite fascinating. And then he goes on, I'm skipping a few pages here because he's going on talking about the Southern Cross and the sky in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, they're approaching the island of Tobago. And there he notes down in his diary, the island of Tobago presents a very picturesque aspect. It is merely a heap of rocks carefully cultivated, and the dazzling whiteness of the stone forms an agreeable contrast to the verdure of some scattered tufts of trees. Cylindric and very lofty cactuses crown the top of the mountains and give a peculiar physiognomy of the tropical landscape. The sight of the trees alone is sufficient to remind the navigator that he has reached an American coast, for these cactuses are as exclusively peculiar to the New World as the heath are to the old. And now Humboldt is really approaching America. See how he describes the island of Tobago? On the one hand, it's a description, right? And on the other hand, he's drawing analogies to European flora. So you have really to know your own geography. Let me use the word here in a very broad sense, to be able to do that, right? So for all of you who haven't traveled far yet, make sure to learn about local and regional geography. This can't hurt and can really prepare you for your time abroad. Coming up next, and the last topic of the show, are the announcements for Geography Frontline, episode 120. The International Geographical Union, and there the Commission on Geography of Governance, organizes an annual conference that's taking place in April from 12th to 14th of April at the Institute of Geography and Spatial Planning, University of Lisbon in Portugal. And so, as I said, it's about the geography of governance, and on their website they say the annual conference of the IGU Commission on Geography of Governance, to be held in Lisbon in April 2012, will explore some of the current problems and future challenges and opportunities in local governance. We welcome submissions on any aspect of the broad area of local governance, but would particularly encourage papers on the two main themes. The impact of the economic and financial crisis on local governance, and citizen e-participation in urban governance. If this sounds interesting to you, then be sure to check the next flights to Lisbon, and don't forget to bring your audio recorder, right? So this is it. Episode 120 of Geography Frontline has come to an end. Next week, we'll continue our talk about everything that's interesting for you in the field of geography, of course. So bring up your email program now, click on Create New Email, and send your recommendations, comments and wishes to comment@geography.com. Hope to hear from you soon. I'm signing off with one thing you should never forget. The network is us.